minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
It's Monday. If there are any doubters out there about whether or not Air America was going to survive, well, I am sitting right now in a brand new studio with my friend Mark Riley, and I feel like I'm on a spaceship, dude.
This is Rocket Ship X-12.
I know. I got to figure out how to work all the buttons and knobs and stuff, and like Chris Kalo, the Costco ho, is in the other room now, so that's gonna be a little weird because I gotta look
stay
at
in there. He doesn't have to stay in there,
dude. It's like NASA in there. There's 20 people in there because they're all wondering. It's like, are we on? Is everything good? Are we okay? Is ground control good right now? I'm being approached by a technician as
we
speak.
That's Major Tom right there.
As I know, Juan is the guy who's in charge of all the machines in the room, and he's doing something. I assume we're still going on the air, so that's good.
Yes.
Everything is beautiful. This thing is working perfectly. Did you have a good weekend there, Riley?
Yeah, it was a busy one, and it was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you do?
Well, went to kind of an open house for my daughter's school. My son came over, and my grandson. So it was wonderful.
How touching is that?
Yeah.
Riley's got a life out there in the world.
Yeah, man. It was. I mean, my son, of course, promptly got lost trying to get to my house.
I'll tell you. I look at my life sometimes, Riley. I'm looking at, like, I didn't watch the Emmys last night, but I know they were on. I got a list of winners right here in front of me, and I can't tell you, I have not seen half of these stupid shows on the air. What am I doing with my life aside from going to bed at 8:30 to do this show? But like, I don't even know. I saw Arrested Development once. I've never seen Desperate Housewives. I've seen Everybody Loves Raymond a few times. Scrubs I've never seen. Will and Grace, don't know. Do you watch any of these television shows?
I thought Arrested Development was still a rap group. That's how far behind the times I am. I'll tell you the truth. I don't. You're right. I have not seen. My wife watches Desperate Housewives for whatever reason. But other than that, I don't really know about any. Will and Grace, Scrubs. I have no idea about plot lines. I have no idea. Deadwood? Wouldn't know it if it ran over.
Well, Deadwood I saw a couple times. That's on HBO. That's the lofty sort of salon of high-end television. I'll watch that occasionally.
Wait. Hold what? On. Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Is he related to Justine
Bateman? That's Justine Bateman's brother. He was a child actor. And now he's on this genius sitcom Arrested Development, who I have friends who write on it, but I guess I don't have time to watch.
What happened to Justine Bateman?
I don't know.
Shows how far gone I am. I remember her. She was, what, 83?
That was this show with Michael J. Fox.
Yeah,
Was it? Different? What is it called? Different Strokes?
No, that was Gary Coleman. Family
Ties.
That's family it. Ties, yes, that's it.
What's wrong with us? Are we just old? I guess I would say.
L.A. Law? Can anybody read Hill Street Blues?
But even this one, like this, James Spader won for Boston Legal. Never watched it. Tony Shalhoub won for Monk. I read for that. Never watched it. We've had him on the show. I've watched it for maybe 10 minutes. Felicity Huffman, Desperate Housewives. Never watched it. The pictures I see in magazines look good, but I never watched the show itself. Here we go. What is this? Everybody Loves Raymond. That won for Best Show again. A drama series, Lost. Don't even know what that is. I have no idea what it's about. You?
I don't know any of this. Did Donald Rumsfeld win for his comments on the war in Iraq?
You know what, Riley? He did.
There you go.
Lost is what I am right now when it comes to television, I guess, because I spend Friday and Saturday, I ended up playing guitar for like 3 hours by myself.
I've got it in my head that's a worthy avocation.
I got it in my head that I got my chops back.
There
I'm ready to go. So if the phone rings and someone needs me to do some studio work, I'm all set. So let's see if we can get into some news here. I can't believe this new studio. This is a very exciting thing. I never thought it would happen, and here it is. I'm sitting in it, and it's happened. And we got a little office. We're in a new bunker downtown.
Yeah, man. We got high ceilings. We got Juan is over there looking like he's NASCAR in the pit somewhere trying to fix a tire or something.
He is in the pit, Riley. Unfortunately, it's just below me, and he's down there playing with knobs.
But
let's just leave that there. So here we go. North Korea. This is after years.
You're a rough guy, man.
It's getting dirty already. I appreciate it, Juan. Juan is another guy I don't even know.
Yeah, I know. But they've all been up 48 hours. They've all, they all got sleep in their eyes.
I'm just happy that we are broadcasting. It's happening. I was actually moved, when we came into the new studio. Studios when we came into the new building, because you and I had been up at the other building, and that was, it always had a temporary feeling to me.
I had been there since the old LIB first moved over there, but I too had a temporary feeling.
Well, in the offices, it's like I never had any real connection to the offices, because what did I have? We had a desk. I really, when we were moving, I'm like, what am I bringing? Well, I'm going to need this mug and my stool. I feel like the end of the jerk.
Anything.
You didn't bring anything.
I said, look, I empty out the desks. Let's move on.
Let's talk about some news. Now, this is like pretty amazing. North Korea has agreed to end its nuclear program in exchange for, security, economic and energy benefits, and maybe there's a potential to ease some tension with the United States. I mean, this has been going on for years that there's been this standoff, and maybe I guess this is definitely a huge breakthrough internationally, Riley.
It is a breakthrough in that North Korea was looking for certain things. All through that time when they said, we have a bomb and we're ready to use it, all of that, they were...
You all right there? Yeah. So
looking for something.
Yeah. So that this means that because North Korea is now maybe Kim Jong Il is actually going to become a relatively responsible dictator. Is that possible? Is it possibly a responsible dictator, right?
Well, that depends on how you look at it. But I will say this: the North Koreans seem to always have this flair for the dramatic when it comes to these sorts of things. You know, the chief negotiator was getting ready to go home.
Yeah.
Right? He was ready to end things. It's a failure. Let's, move on to the next thing. And the next thing you know, the North Koreans turn around saying, you know what? We'll go for this given certain, economic concessions and that sort of thing. One of the things that the North Koreans, I think, are going to get out of this, oil.
There's a lot of problems with North Korea, but he's been denying his people, it's a completely economically deprived country because of what they put into military and what they put into isolating themselves from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So maybe this will benefit at least some of the people that are living there. I don't know how that's going to play out because he's so nuts. Isn't he nuts?
Well, he's a little out there, but not everyone who works for him is completely nuts. What they did agree to do in this situation is make provisions for what's called a light water nuclear reactor, which apparently is not able to be used to, convert uranium into a bomb or something. And it looks as though the United States and other countries, despite their skepticism about Korea owning any nuclear technology, are prepared to let them do this. Now, the question is, they're going to end up having to spend $3 billion to get this done. And, when your people don't have food, it's kind of difficult to justify spending that kind of money, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, we've got our own problems here in this country, that's for sure. I mean, the tourists, there might be another hurricane off the coast of Florida. Tourists were told to evacuate the lower Florida Keys yesterday. There's apparently a new tropical depression off the coast that could become a hurricane. I'm not sure. I'm not a meteorologist. I don't know exactly how this works. But a hurricane watch has been issued, which means that conditions with at least 74-mile-per-hour winds are possible by today. So some people have started to evacuate. I imagine that some people are like, in light of what happened in New Orleans, have got to be freaking out a little bit.
Well, remember that they are evacuating South Florida. That means there is the slight possibility that this hurricane will go across Florida, head west, and head right back into the Gulf Coast.
It's weird. I have never noticed hurricanes, as much as I am noticing them now. Obviously, New Orleans was a horrendous disaster. But, in the past, I've known about hurricanes. I know they come. I know they go. I've never lived in a place that had hurricanes. But I think the entire world is acutely sensitive to hurricanes at this point in time.
Well, I think the entire world is acutely sensitive to anything Mother Nature can bring, whether it's the tsunami, whether it's earthquakes, whatever it is, we are starting to see Mother Nature act in ways that completely befuddle the dolts in the Bush administration.
Well, I'll tell you, Kanye West said about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that George Bush didn't like black people, and there seems to be today new proof of that, and we'll tell you what that is in just a second. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
It's just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Nineteen past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. We are broadcasting from the new, beautiful underground bunker studios that have just been provided for us. Man, I thought this was never going to happen, Riley, but we are in a new studio.
A rocket ship. We could even do, exercises.
Just to tell all those people, just to show all those people that might have doubted Air America's success. I can't believe it. I'm excited about it. We got the iNews coming up in a few minutes. You know, for all those big Morning Sedition fans out there, Jim Earl is back, which means he's bringing back all the Milfington characters with him. So get excited for that. It's a whole new world down here, Riley. I couldn't be more excited.
Wait a minute. Are you sure they gave him a key to get in?
Yeah, it's all taken care of. They gave him and all three of his characters a key to get in. Hey, this Friday, you can join the Morning Sedition March on Washington. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM studios in D.C. The day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. If you're going to be in D.C. anyways for either of those things, or I would imagine if you're going to one, you're going to both. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan there. We're going to have some giveaways. You need to win tickets to actually go to D.C. this time. So you got to go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. It's not going to be hard to win them. The contest is open until the end of our show on Wednesday morning. We want people to come down. It's going to be a great time. I'm going to be performing at that Green Fest, or as I'm going to call it, the Idealism Expo.
Oh, yeah.
down there. The Greta, what the Green Fest, it's a big event. There's going to be all types of alternative. I guess it really is an idealism expo. There's going to be, yeah. You know what I mean? There's people
who want to make a better world.
Farmers, politicians. People who have big ideas about things. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What is it? Well, yeah, there'll be a few. Of course. You know who's opening for me?
There goes the ideal of the idealism.
Kucinich is opening for me.
Oh, well, he's cool. He's all right.
He's not opening for me. He's going on before me.
And now Mark Barron. All right.
I don't know who's going to be funnier. But look, let's talk about this. This is a very interesting development, if not heinous development. The government is basically gutting affirmative action in hiring and federal contracts for the rebuilding of New Orleans. From what I understand, Riley, if you showed this article to me this morning, they granted a limited exemption and waiver for 3 months, and it's not just about affirmative action; it's about Vietnam vets and the disabled as well.
Yes.
What does this mean? What is the power play here? Why would they do this?
Okay, and especially why would they do this against the backdrop of George W. Bush, going to New Orleans and holding photo ops, trying to convince everybody he really does care about black people. This is why. He does not want to force Kellogg, Brown, and Root and these other corporations that are going to get these contracts to actually hire any black people. See, because right now, I don't know what their racial composition is. I have no idea. But my guess is they don't have a lot. And they want to free these companies from the onus of having to hire anybody.
Well, it's horrendous because there's certainly plenty of black people that could use some work right now in New Orleans.
About 185,000.
Right. So they are just going to go in there, and what this does is it protects them from basically hiring anybody in the area. They're just bringing in their own guys, and they're insulating it. Just for what is the ultimate reason, though, Riley?
It means that they don't have to change their corporate structure. They don't have to change their corporate culture. They don't have to do anything. They get these, and many, by the way, of these contracts have turned out to be no-bid contracts. So not only are they exempt from having to hire any black people, hire any Vietnam vets, hire any disabled people whatsoever, but these folks are able to keep their corporate cultures intact so they can go on to the next gig.
All right, so what you're saying is that they're going to go into New Orleans and they really don't have to hire anybody.
They don't have to hire anybody black, that's for sure.
Right, but do you think that they are going in with their armies of their own contractors and they're just not going to do any hiring? Is this just to protect them from having to actually bring in any local help?
Well, if you look at how contracting works in New York, for example, or in many other major American cities, when it comes to construction, what happens is the corporation hires the contractors. The contractors then, in turn, hire subcontractors who hire workers. And each step along that chain is there's a responsibility, according to the Office of Federal Contract Compliance and the regulations that they're supposed to enforce. This frees up everybody. The subcontractors don't have to worry about it. The contractors don't have to worry about it. The corporations that bring in the contractors don't have to worry about it.
I'm surprised. It seems to me that this would have been an opportunity for the Bush administration to pretend like they're actually creating jobs for people.
Well, see, they figure this is going to fly in under the radar.
Yeah.
Nobody knows, and not that many people know what the Office of Federal Contract Compliance is, but I got an email, actually from my sister-in-law, thank you very much, Joy, who sent this to me, and it was just a message saying that they had waived this stuff, and then I went on the Office of Federal Contract Compliance's website to get the information, and sure enough, there it is from a guy named James.
Wow. So this is what's really interesting, that they're going to disengage affirmative action policy. They're going to disengage hiring any Vietnam vets. They're going to take away the hiring of the disabled for a 3-month period of time and rebuilding New Orleans. But notwithstanding the foregoing, this is right from the letter.
Yep.
The following FAR requirements will continue. Posting of the equal opportunity is a law notice. So
I guess that maybe that's like a calendar or something.
Well, no, but I mean, they're going to put that we are an equal opportunity employer, but yet they've just disengaged anything that would enable them to do that or that would encourage them doing that.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable to me. It's almost like a bad joke. So let's, in a few minutes, or I guess we can start it right now, actually. We can talk a little bit about what is going on in New Orleans in terms of the chaos that is revolving around the reconstruction effort. I mean, right now, President Bush, has promised, a very broad range of initiatives to help evacuees, including $5,000 grants to help the underemployed find jobs. Well, they're not going to find them with any of these contractors, if he has his way. There's a voucher program for students, and there's more money for state Medicaid programs, but I think that a lot of these promises had to have fallen on doubtful ears because the initial efforts to provide for the evacuees has become this confusing mess in most areas. And I have to assume that if I know human nature at all, and maybe I don't, that a lot of people who were living in New Orleans during Bush's address to the country had to have been saying, yeah, right. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's going to get done. Okay.
Yeah, and that would have been a mellow response. I'm sure some other people threw rocks at their TV sets. How does anyone think that an agency that completely flummoxed the early part of this recovery is now going to have new leadership and suddenly everything's going to be okay? Bureaucratic red tape is strangling the recovery effort, and nobody wants to take responsibility. People are, they're telling people to call toll-free numbers to get help and information, and people stay on hold for 2 and 3 hours and can't get through.
Yeah, and it seems like more than just red tape. It seems like literally there is chaos. There is still no real order. There is no procedures that are being followed, and there's communication problems. We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about how they're not going to change the bankruptcy legislation to help people out. Baby man Sensenbrenner is now, screaming and yelling, and he's not even going to have a hearing. This guy is one of the biggest bastards in the Republican organization. We're going to talk about him, and we're going to have the iNews in just a second. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We are broadcasting live from the new bunker. We're here in the new Air America Radio studios. Everything's all in one place now, Riley. It's a great thing. So that's a big F you to all of you who thought that maybe we weren't going to survive. Not only were we surviving, but I'm looking at fancy wood frames on a new studio window.
I'm impressed.
And framing those, what it's framing, the lovely faces of Dan Pashman, Brendan
McDonald.
Three
plasma screens, by the way, yes.
Three plasma screens, which thank God we have turned off. Look at Riley. He's like, when can I watch now?
Yeah.
I'm glad that those are
Jerry? Time for Jerry.
Exactly.
But by the way, Chris has turned on ESPN in here, so that's
so. Is that why I can't seem to get his attention? We got little Goliath over there looking baffled as he usually does every morning. Dave, our employee, he's not really an intern. What are you, Dave? Do you actually? Are you a paid employee, Dave? Yeah, can you talk in
administrative
there?
Administrative assistant. Yeah, I'm getting that.
Are you a paid employee here?
Yeah, a small amount of money. I can barely hear what he's saying.
That's okay, man. Don't go back to sleep. Anyway, see,
that's cold.
I'm sorry, man. No, he's doing great things. See, no, I like Dave. He's a good guy. He's an interesting.
He found your notebook, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And I'll tell you, he's a Zen presence. You know, there's something about a cat that operates at his speed where you just sort of like it relaxes me. It actually relaxes me. I don't know if I asked him if he would be. If I said, are you relaxed? I'm not sure. Do you get more relaxed than you already are? Can you hear me, Dave?
Do you think I'm a relaxed person?
Well, yeah, I think you seem like a very relaxed person.
I am the opposite of relaxed.
Really? He calls you the human quaalude. What are you talking about?
Maybe you ought to tell your body and your head.
No, that's just, oh, man. You know, no.
Looks to be deceiving.
My relaxation is a function of my being so unrelaxed, actually. When I get relaxed, I get really angry and frenetic and jumpy, you know?
What'd you do, Maren? You opened something up here. This isn't good.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Do we have a dream diary you My God.
Actually, I had another dream.
Okay,
I'll tell you about that later.
All right,
thank you.
Maybe we should just make it your show. I think we found it. All right, Dave, so we're going to talk to you about your dream and also the big theories about relaxation. I thought that you seem to have put a lot of thought into it, that maybe I could get more help from you than I thought. So here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Well, that's not the right noise at all, is it? That's a scream. That's not the right.
Hey, I've got to tell you, we got a new iNews machine.
That screams?
Oh.
I just strangled the new machine.
It begs for mercy when you try to use it.
I had no idea the machine was a little girl. All right, here we go. Let's try it now.
There you go.
Sorry, the new studios. But it's not the studio's fault. It's this other machine that we had the old studio's fault. Anyways, here we go. From the San Francisco Chronicle, Bush sees bright day emerging in Gulf. Translation, Bush sees bright day in the Gulf, followed by mushroom cloud rapture. All right, from the ABC News, Spectre seeks another Roberts-like nominee. Translation, Spectre launches massive Roberts 2.0 cloning initiative. From the Associated Press, NASA wants astronauts back on moon by 2018. NASA wants astronauts back on moon by 2018. Translation, NASA to retrieve Neil Armstrong's golf clubs and car keys. Now I can't get it out of my mind, the secret life of little Goliath Dave, and here, you know, just misunderstood, like he's actually in a state of, you know, kind of perpetual paralysis from anxiety, which makes him talk like, hey, what's going on? But what's really going on is like, help, I need, and it's so exhausting that he's in this mode that seems almost zen. I can appreciate that. I get that sometimes, and usually, you pretty much exist in your entire life is lived in pre-nap phase, because when I get so stressed out that I'm in that weird paralysis, it makes me relaxed. I'm just moments away from a nap.
I do get tired a lot.
Okay.
It's exhaustion from stress, you know?
Yeah, I do know, man. And you know,
I'm not even doing anything.
Well, that's pretty clear.
Thanks for the info.
At least he admits it.
It's a revelation.
All right. We'll get back on it, Dave, because I think this is just, I think there's a lot of material here that you have a lot you want to share. All right, let's, you know, what we didn't really talk about, Riley, is the movement back toward New Orleans. Despite the warnings of the man the president put in charge to oversee FEMA, this is Vice Admiral Thad W. Allen. Mayor Ray Nagin is defending his decision to encourage people to go back into some neighborhoods and try to get their lives and businesses together. Now, Nagin has initiated a phased-in return that began this weekend. He said he wanted to get about 180,000 people back into the city inside of a week, starting with neighborhoods that were the least affected by the storm in terms of flooding. Electricity and clean water have been restored in some areas. He plans to start today with the Algiers District, followed by the Garden District and the French Quarter as the week progresses. Now, apparently, it is ultimately the mayor's decision, but he is. Now, is this some sort of farce that's playing out here? he's meeting resistance from FEMA, all right? And there is a lack of communication seemingly between FEMA and between Nagin's office. But obviously, you know, he is going ahead because the president has asked him that to get businesses back up, to get everything back moving. I'm sure there are local businesses in New Orleans that are like, we got to do this. But as we talked to our guy at the EPA last week, and we're going to talk to again tomorrow.
Hugh Kaufman,
who told us, you know, it really is not safe. The toxicity levels of some of the water and some of the residue, and now maybe there's mold issues, is very high. And to rush this thing could mean bad things for a lot of people in the future. Now, is Ray Nagin being set up as a fall guy, or is he just doing his job?
I think he's under tremendous pressure from several quarters. One is the New Orleans corporate community, the business community, which does want to get in, wants to see what the damage is, and start talking about rebuilding. On the other hand, the president wants to see some forward movement, some forward motion in New Orleans. And guess what? He can't depend on his own federal agency, FEMA, to show him anything.
Yeah.
So what has he got to do? He had a conversation with Ray Nagin at the end of last week. And my money's on the president saying to Ray Nagin, look, you do this. You be the one that brings these businesses back. You know that the business community wants to come back. The problems are severalfold. One, you've got health issues, but you've also got a crisis as far as hospitals are concerned. If people get sick, there are not enough emergency medical personnel on hand to treat any of them.
Oh, man. I mean, after this, apparently the guy, Joe Capello, who is the vice president of the National Hospital Accreditation Organization.
Yes.
He basically said that the healthcare infrastructure of New Orleans is completely gone. It no longer exists. He went on to say that the federal government needs to go in there and make sure the hospitals are a safe environment before they are reopened. And I don't know if we can completely trust him. I mean, there are no hospitals. You know, he said some stuff about what went down right after the hurricane that was just mind-blowing, because we actually read reports about doctors that were put in triage positions, that were put in a position. Some of them did euthanasia as opposed to abandon some of the patients. And what he was saying is that a lot of the administrators at some of these hospitals put a lockdown on the pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. and the doctors couldn't even get in to administer them. And the generators didn't work. So that means life support systems went down. Air conditioners went down. And now some people are being accused, like in the retirement home, some people are being accused on criminal charges of abandoning patients. But the chaos that went on right after, none of that's been repaired. The entire health infrastructure is gone. And there's no way you can start a city back up without that being in place, certainly.
Well, that's the whole thing. You're inviting people back into an environment that may not be safe for them. Now, again, I understand why Mayor Nagin may have felt pressured to do so, but he is setting himself up, Maren, to be the fall guy. If some large number of people get sick, God forbid anybody dies trying to get in, or while they're back trying to assess damage, we don't know what the structural situation is, what many of these buildings that have been underwater for a couple of weeks.
Mike, right when I was looking at these stories, my only thought was that this is a classic neocon death cult Bush administration tactic, where they got a bunch of people saying different things. And the only guy saying that things got to get underway is the little guy. It's the mayor of New Orleans, all right? FEMA's saying, I don't know, man, it doesn't look good. The administration is trying to, kind of negotiate this entire this reconstruction effort, but the one guy that's going against the grain and saying that no matter what, we got to get people in is Ray Nagin. So if people get sick in 3 weeks or 3 years, or if things don't work out, or if things break down again, he's going to be to blame.
You know what's amazing about this, and when you mentioned the different people that are a part of this, on the one hand, and by the way, there's been a firestorm of criticism around Bush's decision to send Karl Rove down there to do whatever it is he's supposed to be doing. You also have a new head of FEMA by the name of Paulison, who hasn't been heard from literally since the day he was appointed. You've got Vice Admiral Allen, who's the guy on the ground standing on a balcony in New Orleans saying, you know what? This is not safe and we can't bring it. So who are you supposed to believe? Who is actually in charge here?
I'll tell you who I believe. Our buddy Hugh Kaufman from the EPA.
Oh, him, I believe.
He's going to be on the show tomorrow. And I think this is classic Republican tactics. I think that everybody's saying different things. Karl Rove is holding the puppet strings on top of everybody. There's different things coming out of everybody's mouth. So it creates a layer of bureaucratic confusion in terms of talking points that goes out into the world till people just get exhausted by it. And then they do whatever the hell they want.
Well, they do. whatever they want, like scuttling affirmative action on contracts, like not giving anyone in New Orleans any kind of relief as far as the bankruptcy law is concerned. They show one face to the public, but then on the other side of the equation, they're slapping the same people that they say they're trying to help.
Right, and they're not willing to make any adjustments to the tax structure of this country or this bankruptcy legislation. They think they're going to pull it out of the budget because there's so much pork in there anyways they're going to solve all these problems. Even Bill Clinton chimed in on this, so we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back. The bankruptcy legislation that is not going to be changed. We're going to talk a little bit about where they think they're going to get the money for this, and we're also going to talk about what the good president, Bill Clinton, had to say about how we should get that money. It's 45 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. You know why I'm praying for you? Because you're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
More into these idiots, these Republicans, that Republican lawmakers are looking to do everything they can in terms of cutting the budget to make some money available for most of the hurricane rebuilding. They are trying to do anything but raise taxes or stop the repeal of the estate tax. God forbid. Here you got an entire country. You got an entire country willing to do whatever's necessary to help in this rebuilding situation. That you got an entire country willing to step up, but these guys will not. They will go on protecting the rich from getting any sort of elevated taxes at all, even when it comes to helping other Americans. And you know what? The bottom line, Riley, I don't think that rich people, on some level, there is this. Even this, I think this even has to do with Democrats. Rich people, people who have a lot of damn money, on some level, they do not want to give any of it away. That's how they got rich.
Well, that's true to some extent, but there seems to be some polling data that indicates that the rich really are prepared at least to kick in something for this Gulf relief. But see, here's the problem that Bush is confronting. He is saying on the one hand he's going to continue his tax-cutting agenda that will cost the American people $1.4 trillion over the next 10 years. The estate tax, all these other things, these adjustments that he's making, and the adjustments that he and Congress have been looking to make to a large extent are coming off the backs of poor people. Medicaid is one of the areas they're looking to cut. Now, Bush comes on and says, well, we're going to do this relief thing. We're not going to raise taxes. And he didn't say how much was going to be spent. He did not say where the money would come from. A lot of people are saying, well, we'll cut some Congress members' pet projects. You do that at your political peril. These, guys like Trent Lott are not going to forego a military base in Mississippi because Bush wants to try and help the lower end of the state.
Well, what about these? They wanted to cut it from these thousands of highway rebuilding projects. Apparently, there's like 6,000, little bits of business that lawmakers have put in there to bring to their own districts. Mm-hmm. That there's that much pork. But the bottom line is, it seems to me that they try to infuse conservative fiscal policy into what is a financial obligation to Americans and the infrastructure of New Orleans in the aftermath of a natural disaster. And what you got is you got a lot of people that have been willing to do it through charity, but why not do it the right way? Why not do it the way that Americans have always done it and raise the taxes just a little bit on the wealthy and maybe on everybody?
Well, look, there are a lot of different ways that you can do a tax increase. You can do a tax increase, for example, with a sunset provision. In other words, you do a tax increase, you say, we're going to increase taxes a dedicated amount, which will go to the hurricane relief, and we'll do it so that it sunsets after a year.
Right.
It's eliminated after
right.
a year. That way, you're not putting in anything that's permanent. You're not making it, part of the American tax system. It is a specific tax with a specific and for a specific purpose.
Yeah, they're willing to cut affirmative action for 3 months. They're willing to do these smaller deals that hurt people on a sunset situation, but they're not willing to help Americans by taxing other Americans in a time of need. And what really baffles me is, like I said before, the conservative fiscal policy inserting it into dealing with this situation. You get people like this guy, Representative Mike Pence of Indiana, who said, quote, "We simply cannot let a catastrophe of nature to become a catastrophe of debt for our children and grandchildren," end quote. That's like a Republican talking point when it comes to debt. Yet we're still going to get the money from somewhere, right, Riley?
Well, look, what they don't want to say, what none of these Republicans want to say, is that you cannot finance a war in Iraq, a war in Afghanistan, and a hurricane relief all at the same time. One of them should have to go. Guess which one? Iraq!
Yeah, and also a tax cut.
And yeah, and a tax cut. You can't do all of these things. It's fit, any way that they're going to try and structure this to sell it to the American people is nothing but smoke and mirrors, and they know it.
And even President Clinton chimed in. He said the Democrats should oppose policies that result in the government borrowing more money from other countries to pay the cost of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, rebuilding the Gulf Coast, and providing tax cuts for the wealthiest. He said Democrats should make those policies an issue in next year's congressional elections. They absolutely should. And to quote Big Bill here, quote, we depend on Japan, China, the United Kingdom, Saudi Arabia, and Korea primarily to basically loan us money every day of the year. I don't think it makes any sense. I think it's wrong, end quote. And that is not conservative policy, to borrow that much money constantly.
No, it isn't part of conservative policy. And it also brings up a very interesting problem for the administration. Bill Clinton has become the public face, along with George W. Bush's father, of the hurricane effort. They have Bush-Clinton Relief Fund.
Yep.
They're asking people to donate. The National Football League, for goodness sake, has the Hurricane Relief Weekend. And here is the public face of it slamming the guy that's trying to do it.
And I'll tell you, one of the Democrats that really stood up to this idea that repealing the estate tax in the face of all this is just such a smack in the face of people that got hurt in this is Barack Obama.
Yes.
Senator Obama. Actually, I'll quote him. He was on, I believe it was Face the Nation, in talking about repealing the estate tax. He said, quote, this, I think, is where the problem comes in. You can't fight a war in Iraq that's costing upwards of $200 billion and rebuild Katrina, rebuild New Orleans, and respond to the aftermath of Katrina and try to deal with all the other domestic needs that we have and then cut taxes for the wealthiest 1% of America. I mean, there was talk right immediately after the hurricane that the Republicans in the Senate were still going to push forward with the repeal of the estate tax, which is mind-boggling, I think. We need some adult supervision of the budget process, end quote.
Yep.
And that's Senator Barack Obama of Illinois. You know, so he, you know, this is really where it comes down to seeing the difference between, there's no way that people, certainly people who don't make $1 million,
mm-hmm.
can see this administration as doing anything for them.
I wonder if George W. Bush is going to start thinking about cutting and running in Iraq. Otherwise, the math doesn't make sense.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. We're going to come back with a job listing. Maybe we'll get into the head of Little Goliath.
Uh-oh.
And see what's going on in there. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We are broadcasting live from our downtown here in Manhattan, the brand new studio, the Air America Radio studio, to all you doubting concerns, all you spiteful little weenies out there in the dark who thought we were going to fail. We are not. I'm sitting in living proof of that. We've got this beautiful studio. I'm very excited to see my friend Mark Riley.
This is really great.
Yeah, in the studio, after being in that studio that we were in, that which was a nice studio, but it was a little outdated.
Yeah, it was.
I feel like now I am flying a spaceship. In a few minutes here, we're going to talk about how baby man douchebag James Sensenbrenner, who has had a long history of being a douchebag, is continuing to honor that role. Big news out of North Korea, and also big news out of America in terms of Yahoo or Air America Radio or not online. What the big news is? It's like North Korea ends nuclear program and the Emmys.
Yeah,
who won the Emmys? It's like the yin and yang. But let's do this. We know a lot of people are out of work and spent Sunday looking through the want ads or checking out Monster.com, and we want to help be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here is our Morning's Edition Monday job listing. We all saw the president's speech from New Orleans last week. Judging from this want ad we found, it seems that they're finally getting serious about the work that needs to be done. Rebuilding experts needed. The Bush administration seeks qualified experts to help rebuild after the massive damage done in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Specifically, we are referring to the damage done to the Bush administration. The extent of the devastation is hard to imagine. Lives and political agendas have been put on hold. Vacations have been tragically cut short. Driven to desperate measures, some people have been forced to accept responsibility. Heck, one guy even lost his job, people. The immediate challenges are enormous. First of all, the flood of negative press has to be controlled. Also, the political landscape is covered with toxic muck. Blame has to be shifted, and quickly. And in the long run, we need to create a conservative infrastructure which can resist the winds of change. Anyone who can help is encouraged to contact their local conservative think tank. All good Americans have been moved to tears by the plight of those whose lives and approval ratings have been shattered by this catastrophe. At a time like this, it is vital that we remember the victims. Yes, that's true.
That's true.
This is unbelievable. Like, I hear Dan Pashman in my head, but I can hear everybody in the booth. We didn't have that before.
No, we didn't. We didn't have 20 people in the booth before either.
Well, there's a lot of people I've never seen before. They're professionals. They've flown in.
Experts
of all kinds.
Is this kind of like when they used to send to Detroit? The New York sorry.
Chris Lopresto.
Sorry, J. Edgar.
Staten Island. Oh, he's not J. Edgar. He's just protecting his family.
Don't talk bad about your family, Riley.
There you go. There you go.
Did I say anything about the Lopresto clan? I didn't say anything.
You know what? I think this conversation is over. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, guys, let's just move on.
Okay.
Later in the show, we're going to have author Walter Mosley on, and after that, we are going to have Suzanne Parker, who wrote a book called Eating It Like Queens, which is about my neighborhood. A lot of people who don't live in New York don't realize that Queens is the only really true melting pot left in the world. It's unbelievable. I actually went out to I got some Brazilian food the other night with my wife, and I have to be honest with you, not a good experience for me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
What'd you have? You didn't have feijoada, did you?
I don't even know what that is. what is that?
Feijoada is kind of like the national dish. It's kind of like chitlins for black folks in the state. Uh-huh. It's got a lot of pig stuff and a lot of different things, and they kind of make it into a stew.
So it's not fried pig guts?
No.
And it's not fried pig fat?
No.
It's pig stew of some kind.
Pig stew.
Did not have
boiled
that.
Pig
did not
stew.
Have that. I'm looking forward to talking to her because I'm a foodie myself, and it's important to know what to order and what not to order. Like I know that when you go into a restaurant, it's best to get what they do. It's hard to know what that is, and I just didn't get the right thing. Really. I got some sort of fish thing with potatoes, and
uh-oh,
the fish was chewy. Fish not supposed to be chewy. But this is not important to the world. Let's get into Sensenbrenner, because 31 congressional Democrats called to waive some of the provisions to the new bankruptcy laws last week to accommodate victims of Hurricane Katrina. Now, Representative James Babyman Sensenbrenner, he's the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, said he will not even hold a hearing on waiving the law for disaster relief. The new laws go into effect next month. Will not even hold a hearing. This is inhumane, Riley. The victims are already stringing out their credit cards just to survive. This could break families for generations, and the Republicans don't care. They are protecting the money of the wealthy for generations by repealing the estate tax, but could care less for people who make under $1 million a year, losing everything forever. This thing is going to wipe lives out. Even credit card companies and banks are giving them a little leeway, but not the Republicans. They're not willing to put one of these things that we talked about before. How about a 3-month to it? It might need to be a 3-year sunset on a plan to ease this bankruptcy legislation, because given that legislation that is enacted, that starts working next month, it's almost impossible for individuals to declare bankruptcy.
Well, you know, you have a situation where the Congress takes away and the Congress takes away. We had Jerry Nadler and John Conyers and Sheila Jackson Lee and a bunch of other Democrats who said, look, you know, with the problems that are coming out of Hurricane Katrina, a lot, not just individuals, but small businesses are going to end up having to declare bankruptcy because they're going to find themselves ruined. They're not going to have anything. This guy, a Republican from Wisconsin, says, hey, no, doesn't matter.
This guy, it's going to destroy families forever, but yet that on the other side just blows my mind. They are unwilling to make any, exceptions around the repealing the estate tax, but they are going to just hold on to this legislation. They just want people to die. They really don't care how people deal with this. They don't care where they disperse. Like, even the idea that they don't know where most people have even moved, have been relocated to. That bothers me too, because that makes me believe that they're like, it's not our problem. Let them just, you know, spread out to wherever they're going to spread out and disappear if they're going to disappear. Maybe they'll make it, maybe they won't. It's not our problem. Now, if you don't remember who Representative James Baby Man Sensenbrenner is, he's a Republican from Wisconsin. He's the chairman of the House Judiciary. It's the internet intellectual property. He serves on the House Committee on Homeland Security, but he also held an important role in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. He was acting then as one of the House managers. He's a hard ass, and there's no doubt about that. He believes in criminal prosecution of broadcasters and cable operators who violate decency standards, whatever that means, as opposed to the current FCC regulatory methods. And most recently, on June 10, 2005, Sensenbrenner, acting in his role as chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and you remember this, Riley, we were about this. We were like, I was screaming about this. He abruptly ended and walked out of a meeting where Republicans and Democrats were supposed to be debating the renewal of the USA Patriot Act. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
When John Conyers was in there and a bunch of other Democrats, he just said, that's it, I'm out of here. And,
yeah.
And he left the mic, Gerald Nadler.
Yeah.
It was like, what is going on here? He stormed out like a child.
Well, because James Sensenbrenner is a partisan political operative, just like Karl Rove and a lot of other folks. I mean, what you're looking at here, Mark, is a situation where even the American Bankruptcy Institute, their members, 80% of them, said that there ought to be a two-year moratorium on the more draconian provisions of this bankruptcy law. And yet, Sensenbrenner says, we're not even going to hold hearings on this. We are going to leave these victims to themselves and to their own devices, because that's what he's doing. He is turning that this is just another form of social Darwinism. It's just like, hey, we're going to pass the estate tax. We're going to pass all these other things that benefit the top 1% of the population. But the bottom 90% can, find your own way, whatever.
Adapt or die. They know in their hearts that the manufacturing jobs and the jobs of some of the people who might need to take, that some of the people who are in the lower class of this country might need jobs in that are no longer here. So the Republican solution to that is, well, any opportunity that we can, let's just let them die. And if they don't die and they adapt, well, maybe we can use them for something, because they must have good genes and some, you know, survivalistic dexterity to them, that maybe their kids can be sent to the next war. That's how they think about the poor of this country, and that's I don't doubt that at all.
Oh no, and my guess is some of them, the one area where you may find people of color working to clear up New Orleans is on the ground level, where it's most toxic and where you're most likely to get sick.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, could you go check for mines? There's it, right? That was what they used a lot of, I remember African Americans in some of the wars.
In the Second World War, they had African Americans testing bombs by hitting them.
Okay. Oh, man. So Michael Bloomberg did something interesting. Is he a Democrat? Really? Well, I'll get into that in a second. We'll talk about that. It's 16 past the hour. We got Walter Mosley coming up. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, broadcasting live from the new Air America Radio bunker downtown here in Manhattan.
Yeah.
The greatest city in the world, New York City, and that's why we're going to do a couple of New York City stories if we could, because they resonate throughout the country. I need to say that sometimes. I need to say that, you know, we are a New York City show on some level, but we do obviously go out across the country. But I don't care. You know, some people condescend to New York. Sometimes I read the emails and I see people like, hey, maybe it's not that important what goes on in New York to the rest of us. It's like, well, you know what? I got to be honest with you. You got to come to New York. You got to check out New York, because New York, on some level, does represent the entire world. It's the most international city. It's the greatest city that I've ever lived in.
That's
and
right.
You've been here for a long time, right?
I've been here for a long time. I must tell you, it's my privilege to get caught in like traffic tie-ups, subway delays, that sort of thing. But it's a great city.
But I'll tell you, it's not as bad as L.A. when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, no,
not
man.
As bad as L.A. when it comes to that. Mayor Bloomberg, our own mayor here in New York City, says he doesn't support the nomination of John Roberts for Chief Justice. Now, look, he obviously has no power. It doesn't mean much other than he's making a statement for a reason. But the reason he states that he's not supporting him has to do with Roe v. Wade. But what are the reasons politically? Because, as we know, Michael Bloomberg was a Democrat for years. And apparently, when he was a registered Democrat, so this was prior to 2001, he gave a lot of money to Democrats, but not exclusively. According to this website that we checked out, Newsmeet.com, mm-hmm. over the last 25 years, he's donated $327,000 to Republicans and $337,200 to Democrats. So it's not that big a difference.
No, it's not that big a difference, and you can bet that Mike Bloomberg knows exactly how much he's given to both. Because he keeps track of these
things. That's what rich people do.
Yeah.
Rich people, when you have as much money as Michael Bloomberg does, or your corporation that has that much money, a lot of these rich entities, they play both sides because they need things done for themselves. It's not about political affiliation when you have the kind of money this guy has.
Oh, no, that's very true. But, you know, you got to ask yourself, Mark,
yeah.
why would Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York,
uh-huh.
have anything to say about John Roberts... Justice.
Well, let's see. There, what's going on?
Ka-ching! Okay. That's the reason. You see, Fernando Ferrer, who would be his opponent, consolidating his situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a later morning, in fact, get the 40%. There won't be a runoff, and then everyone, and he, over the weekend, Drangle, Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, all the Democrats have lined up behind him, and Mike Bloomberg needed something to take attention away from all this. So what does he do? He goes out in the public. This is not going to cost him politically one way or the other, and it makes people say, well, you know, the guy maybe does have some Democratic leanings, some Democratic sentiments, and in a city that's 4-1 Democrat by registered voters, he's got to have Democrats or he's done.
From all indication, in terms of polls, he's got it in the bag anyways. Isn't that true?
So that's going to work against him. I hate to tell you this. But
now he's reaching out. He's just trying. So the cost is that he may get a few more Democrats out of this.
He may get some more Democrats out of this. But see, that whole the whole notion that Mike Bloomberg is, you know, pulling out all the stops. He just started running commercials in Spanish, trying to cut into Fernando Ferrer's base constituency. Some of this could end up backfiring on him. He is, the big rap on him over the last 4 years has been an out-of-touch billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent what he does plays into that, he's going to get hurt. He's going to start losing some of those percentage points that he's got. He's got a double-digit lead over Fernando Ferrer. Don't expect it to last.
I wish that things would... So you think that that's going to close up? But do you really believe in your mind that Freddy Ferrer has a chance at winning?
In New York, anybody has a chance. Coming out of the runoff just 4 years ago, Mike Bloomberg was down 31 points in the first poll.
Yeah.
31.
Yeah.
But you never heard about Mayor Mark Green now, did you?
No.
You know why? Because that lead evaporated in 3 weeks.
He kind of hangs around sometimes.
Well, yeah, Mark Green. He's a commentator. And yeah, he's cool. My man.
Do you want to have let's do a couple of quick hurricane things real quick here. I read this piece about they looted the new Walmart. The Walmart that they just built a year ago in New Orleans was completely looted. And the security guy is quoted as saying, they took everything, all the electronics, the food, the bikes. People left their old clothes on the floor when they took new ones. The only thing left are the country and western CDs. You can still get a Shania Twain album, end quote.
Yeah, I know what he's trying to say with that, and I don't like it. No Kanye West on the show.
No,
if
no.
there was any ever...
Oh, they did sell Twain CDs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, there's this other cat, too, this guy, this 76-year-old man who held out in his attic just drinking water for 18 days.
Yes.
And the boats came by, and they heard him like, help me out, help me out. He had come downstairs. He was dehydrated, but he survived on just water. He gets in the copter. The first thing he says is, can we stop at Taco Bell?
We
just got you a little something to eat at Taco Bell. Could you land this thing at Taco Bell?
A gallon and a half was all he had.
Could you imagine being that out of touch with what has gone on? on around you for 18 days as well, not only just surviving, but to come out and realize just how bad the damage really is?
Well, as a 76-year-old man, I'm sure it was touch and go with him as to whether or not he thought he would survive any of this.
I think it's an amazing story that the dude was by himself, just a gallon and a half of water, and he just obviously got into Zen mind.
Yeah.
Not unlike little Goliath, our half-paid intern.
Oh, wait a minute. We didn't find out what was up with him.
Well, I bet he's one of those guys that he just locked into that kind of weird Zen paralysis. It's a survival mode, man.
Really?
A survival mode. And that's what this old guy did. He must have been a tough cat, though.
Yeah, he must have been extremely tough. And there may be other people. Remember, they have not gotten to every house in New Orleans just yet. They are, however, sadly, finding more and more bodies.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the other downside. There are some things that are going well in New Orleans in terms of distributing food and some services. And the Army Corps of Engineers, which initially predicted the pumping out of New Orleans would take up to 3 months, is now predicts it will be wrapped up by October 2nd,
whoa,
which is good. We got Walter Mosley. This guy's written how many books? 16 books? A book a year?
Yeah. It's the 11th Easy Rollins
21 books. 21 books. It's whoa. The 11th. We're going to talk to Walter Mosley in just a minute. Stay with us. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Reilly on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. In just a few minutes, we're going to have the Morning Remembrance. That's right. Morton's in Milpington. Jim Earl is back after a two-week vacation. What a void that left.
Uh-oh.
But now the void that he is back, so that's good. Our next guest is a best-selling author who's just released his most recent novel, Cinnamon Kiss, the 10th installment in the Easy Rollins series. It's a mystery that takes place in 1966 against the backdrop of the Vietnam War. Welcome to the studio, Walter Mosley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
21 books you've written? 21 books.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How many a year is that?
I've been writing about 3 a year and publishing 2. I have 5 more books that aren't published yet, but I'm waiting.
That's
you got 5 books in the can?
Yeah.
Do you do anything else other
no,
than write?
No, hardly at all. But I only write 3 hours a day, but I write 3 hours a day every day, 365 days a year. It has a big impact.
I'm looking for a little inspiration because I need to make time to write more. So when you sit down to write for 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
If nothing comes, you sit there anyways, right?
Well, honestly, no. I sit there until I realize nothing's coming, then I stop. All I have to do is sit down in front of the computer or the page, and I just wait. You know, it's 3 hours a day is a lot.
It's definitely a lot.
And sometimes, you know, you don't write as much, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the new book? Because this is part of a long series. Why don't you take it, for people who don't know about Easy Rollins, where did it start and where are we now?
Well, you know, Easy Rollins starts in a book that's not a mystery called Gone Fishing in the Deep South in 1939, where Easy's coming of age with his psychopathic friend Raymond Mouse Alexander. He goes to the war, which I don't cover, and then he comes back and he goes to Los Angeles. He becomes a private detective almost by mistake.
Okay.
And what he does is he represents people in the community, black people in the community, and he himself represents, you know, black male masculinity through this period of time. I followed him from 1948 to 1966. Now, he's just finished with the Watts riots, and which has been a big change for black America. And now it's 1966. The hippies are kind of making their presence known in California, the Vietnam War.
Panthers yet?
Not quite. Not mm-hmm. quite. I mean, I've done some stuff on black a radical movement, but not quite the Panthers. That'll be in a couple of years. But now he's dealing with the hippies. But what's wrong is, and this is a very insular novel, Easy's daughter has a blood disease and is dying, and the only place that he can cure her is in Switzerland. $35,000. His property, because it was all in Watts, is worth a third of what it was before the riots, and so he can't get any money for it. And he has a choice. He can either go rob an armored car with his friend Mouse, who said, "Hey, man, I can get you the money. We can get it tomorrow. I know a guy."
Yeah, we can take this.
And the other thing is to do a real job as a detective, which is a much more dangerous endeavor. And he takes a job as the
detective. For the sake of the book.
Yeah, yeah.
He would help me take the detective.
Right. But he would have taken the robbery.
Now, you grew up in Los Angeles. How did the hippie movement affect black Los Angeles at the time. At the time you were coming up.
Well, there's a scene in the new book where there's a white woman from the South trying to, you know, get some legal services in on Haight-Ashbury. Easy is sitting there. Her son, so like a little 3-year-old kid, who seems to have very brownish skin and curlyish hair, runs, and Easy picks up the kid before he goes into the street. And the woman, she just puts her hand on his arm and said, "Thank you, honey." And he realizes that this woman, speaking in this accent, which has always been his enemy,
yeah,
is thinking of him in a completely different way. And that was a big, I think that was a big impact on black America. Black people would wander into the hippie movement. They'd say, "Oh, come on. Yeah, you're great." You know, yeah, not really understanding history, not really knowing that it couldn't go everywhere that they wanted to go, but there was a moment where there was complete acceptance.
You know, you talk about the fact that Easy was seriously contemplating doing a bank job, and it seems to me that in a lot of films from the 40s and early 50s, you had people like that, detectives who kind of lived right on the margin.
Yeah.
Is this really as far out as he's ever gone in terms of your previous work? Has he ever decided or thought about doing anything quite this illegal?
Well, I think he's been involved in killing people in previous books, so no. But I think for an audience, it's easier to kill somebody who they think is bad than for a guy to do something which is really a crime.
Mm.
He doesn't do this crime, but he would have done it, and I think it's very clear.
Our guest is Walter Mosley. The new book is Cinnamon Kiss. Now, when you first created Easy Rollins, the detective in your book, what was the inspiration? What made you decide that you needed to make this person?
Well, you were asking about writing before, and I think the most important thing about writing, mm-hmm, is writing is an unconscious activity. You start to write, things come out, and then you look at it and say, "Wow, I was saying that," and then you massage it to become what you meant, mm-hmm, almost unconsciously. My thing with Easy Rollins and everybody I've written about since then is writing about black male heroes in America. The group of heroes in America that seems the most left out for me and being celebrated in our books, in our movies, in our music, is black male heroes. And
so
I just write about them all the time.
What are some of these themes, black male heroic themes, or some of the themes about blacks in America that run through your books that you find significant?
You know, the thing is, a theme is less a thing than there's humanity.
Sure.
I was staying on Broadway the other day, and mm-hmm, there was a black man with two younger women, and he had like a maybe 3-week-old infant in his hands. He was just holding the infant up. The infant was sleeping in his hand, and he was watching it. This is an image I just noticed. This is a black man holding a baby in his hand, just smiling at the mm-hmm baby for maybe a quarter of an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's an image that America doesn't see.
Mm-hmm.
America never sees. You don't see it in movies. You don't see it in books. You don't see it anywhere, or hardly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really important for me to bring those images in a language that black America understands,
mm-hmm,
to say, here is so in a way, I'm humanizing black male America, at least, you know, in my books. Not that it isn't already human, but.
You know, that's amazing you say that, because I actually saw Patrick Ewing do something very similar to that in a movie screening once, where he walked in, and, you know, Patrick Ewing is a gigantic guy, and he had his baby in his hand,
yeah,
like that,
yeah,
and was like sitting there taking in the screening, but was all the time not looking at the screen, staring mm at the child. But you know, I wanted to ask you about some of your work aside from your writing,
mm,
because it seems as though you've used the platform that your writing has given you to challenge America on a lot of levels. Certainly challenge America through conversation. Talk a little bit about that aspect of your work.
Well, not only challenge America, but also to challenge black America.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that I feel so strongly, you know, we're these self-named, with the help of Jesse Jackson, African Americans. But while we're African Americans, people are dying, you know, 5 million people dead in Congo, millions dead through the rest of Africa. You have Chad, you have Sudan, you have Ivory Coast and its problems, you have, all over Africa. And you don't have a united effort from African Americans, who are the wealthiest, most powerful, most influential group of black people in the world, doing something about it. We don't have us there. So that'll be a criticism. You know, on the other hand, you know, I belong to Trans Africa. I'm very outspoken. One of the books coming out is called Life Out of Context, which includes a proposal for the nonviolent takeover of the House of Representatives.
Wow.
Which is a really, you know, strong thing for me. I'm believing that, you know, that it, there's no, you can be a media success, which I am to a small degree. But if you don't apply that to some kind of social, you know, basis or context, then you're really not doing anything. You're making money, and you're not making nearly as much money as you're making that white guy who's paying your salary.
What were some of your immediate reactions to the hurricane, in the aftermath of the hurricane?
Well, it was very clear, you know, it was very clear that in that for us, we haven't had a president since Carter who supported poor Americans. And so that infrastructure has eroded all over the country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we have an attack of avian flu, or if we have some kind of crazy bombing, or some kind of natural disaster, an earthquake, et cetera, poor people are going to be left to the side. I think it's a racial element to it, because, you know, people of color have been impoverished, imprisoned, et cetera. But there's the whole notion of, you know, of poverty in America, and mm-hmm. how we're dealing, how we're trying to organize.
Well, you've got my vote. What are you running for? Anything?
I'm not running for anything. In my political book, what I suggest uh-huh. is that Black America withdraw from the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
because I think the Democrats and Republicans are both interest corporations, not uh-huh. political parties.
I think that's true.
And you know, because you give them $1 million, you get what you want. You vote for them, you don't. But the thing is that I think that, you know, we should form interest groups, and other people should form interest groups, you know, gay people, real Republicans, angry young white men, all get together and start their groups, you know, and get seats in Congress, enough to take away, it's enough so neither side has over 49%.
Ooh. But then what about the confusion that comes from having so many different groups that are seemingly at odds with each other?
Well, you know, the confusion is better than the certainty of Bush.
That's true.
You know,
that's
like, you know, we have certainty now. Absolute certainty, but that certainty is just a gun pointed at the head of impoverished America, and I'm really in most of America.
And the world,
yeah. And the rest of the world, yeah. and ourselves. You know, I mean, yeah. really, you know, the thing is that, you know, we don't really see ourselves in context with the world, which is a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Walter Mosley, you were just talking about Katrina, and it seemed to me that you were implying that the response, not obviously not the disaster itself, but the response because of where it was and who it impacted was foreseeable. Is that what you're saying?
Well, of course it was foreseeable. I mean, I knew about it 3 years ago, and I just like visit New Orleans.
Yeah.
People tell me, they say, oh yeah, you know, levees aren't good enough, and if a big storm hits, they say the whole city could get flooded. And I said, the whole city? Your whole city could get flooded? And I go, yeah. And I knew the hurricane. I knew it could get flooded. But you know, the issue is, of course, things like the levees. When you're no longer taking care of your poorest people, then that you have a situation like levees. Well, we don't need to fix it this year. It's probably not going to happen. You know, this is like probably not. Your baby's probably not going to die. You say probably.
Right. Yeah.
How could you say probably?
Because they don't care.
Yeah. Because you know our country is based on a capitalist kind of model.
Okay.
When capitalism and fascism are exactly the same thing. I mean, you know, really, there's the way you garner power. Capitalism has nothing to do with democracy.
But in capitalism, you get a choice of uniform.
Yeah. You get a choice. And people pay attention to you in different kinds of ways. You don't have to, uh-huh. you don't even have to have personality.
That's
you
right.
Know, you have to have money. You know? And, you know.
So you write the mystery series, you write about politics, and I understand you also write some science fiction. Is there a solution in space for us?
Well, I think that, you know, for Black people, science fiction is the only thing. You know, if you write in history, let's say about the United States, and you write, you know, well, in 1820 when the Black senator from Rhode Island, well, that's science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, you're already writing science fiction, you know, because that's not possible. You know,
yeah.
The thing is, our only option is science fiction. You know, I think that that's true for any kind of, you know, political movement. Anybody who's thinking, science fiction is the only way you can really go. It's the smartest fiction in America. Not always the best written, but it's the smartest fiction.
That's
in America.
True on an idea and a vision level.
Yeah, sure.
Walter Mosley, it was great talking to you. Best of luck with the new book, Cinnamon Kiss, is out now. I imagine
today.
I hope to talk to you again. It's
all
great
right.
talking.
Yeah, thank
nice
you
lot,
so
Mark.
Much. Appreciate it.
It's
and
40.
You too, Mark.
It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We'll be back with a Mortensen or a Milfington. I think it's the guy who does the obits today, isn't it? All right.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. But I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline. I'm having a funky good time with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, Newsday.
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, broadcasting live from the new insulated bunker studio at the Air America Radio Corporation building. It's a great new studio. I just want to say hello to all you conservative lurkers out there who had doubts, but we are sitting in living proof that Air America Radio is strong and moving forward. This is beautiful. I feel like I'm on a spaceship. I've said that many times already today for you people that listen to all 3 hours of our show.
Yeah.
I'm just excited about it. We got to break it in, though. It's got that feel to it. You know, even when you get a machine, the machine's got to get used to the way you play with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you kind of like get into that symbiotic relationship with the machine.
Yes.
That's got to happen. We've got to get a little more of our spit on the walls here, and we've got to get a little more.
Oh, you know, we forgot
not like
to
that,
do,
but you know, just by dissipating out of our mouths.
You know, what we forgot to do
what?
Thank all the people who came to Elmo Friday.
Okay, well, let's do
thank
that now.
You.
Thank you. That was we had a great time. That was a great show.
It was a great time.
Look, unfortunately, it's that time of the week again when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh, it's good to have him back. Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy. You all right?
I was... no time to talk right now. Really upset. Right, no, I have allergies.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, try to remember your bit.
Thanks, Pops. Bob Denver, actor, role model, Gilligan. Bob Denver, whose hilarious incompetence kept the castaways from ever escaping Gilligan's Island, finally escaped from life this month when his doctor was unable to patch a defective heart valve using only coconuts and spare radio parts. Denver graduated from Loyola University in the 1950s, with a bachelor's in political science, a degree he later put to good use by making America even more stupid than it was before.
You all right, man? Yeah, you want a tissue?
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
The tissue made out of cardboard?
Yes. The new studio tissue, they don't have the old ones like they used to. It doesn't make any noise. Yeah, gotta work that bug out.
Okay, buddy.
This month, at the request of Democratic Senator Sheila Kuehl, the California State Senate adjourned in Denver's memory, and in his honor, agreed to bungle every opportunity to escape from the reign of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Though in deep grief, Denver's fans can console themselves with the thought that he's now up in heaven getting creeped out by Bob Crane.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, Bob Crane, all those funny movies he made.
Yeah.
When reached for comment, the professor said he should have stood up to Marianne while he had the chance. Denver is survived by his granddaughter and his wife, his son Patrick, and the rest gathered at Forest Lawn.
Maybe you're allergic to something in the new studio.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they must have HEPA filters in here, but you can't keep out everything, can you?
I'll look into it, yeah.
Nell Mundy, potato expert.
Mm.
Nell Mundy, the Cornell University biochemist who was considered an international expert on the potato, died last month in a New York hospital after a careless nurse left her in a paper bag with a ripened banana.
All right.
The famed biochemist who fought hard to dispel the potato's reputation as a weighty clump of empty calories reportedly refused to go on life support, fearing it might turn her into a vegetable. Potato expert.
Vegetables. Yeah.
By the time doctors reached Mundy, startled witnesses say her body had turned brown and soft and grown at least four eyes. You know, Dr. Mundy became passionate about potatoes in the 1950s, Mark.
Yeah.
Drawn by their nutritional richness, low cost, and long life in storage. Not only that, she achieved her first orgasm when Mr. Potato Head gave her the fingerling.
Oh, it's true. I believe you.
Interesting note. Yeah. The Incas were the first to cultivate the potato.
Huh.
The Incas also liked to sacrifice virgins to their sun god. You decide which is better. Mundy requested her body be cut into small chunks, boiled, mashed with milk, butter, and garlic, and served steaming hot with a big plate of haggis.
Oh, God. All right?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Till next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Oh, it's great to have you back, Mort.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so maybe we got to get one of those air purifiers in here
or
something.
Help. There's a lot of sawdust particles in
here. You think it's sawdust particles?
No, I mean, a lot of toxic compounds in potatoes, too. You know that?
And yeah, it's never ending. Look, you know, Mort, I'd like you to come back as Jim in a few minutes and tell us about your vacation. Could you do that? Could you shake the character? How long does that take?
Sure, I'll shake this mother up.
All right. It's 57 past the hour. We'll be back to talk to Jim Rowe about his vacation. We'll also, Bush got arrested. Do you know about that? Someone arrested a Bush. Yeah. Stay with us to find out. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley's Morning Sedition. Yeah, it's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How's everybody doing? We're here at the new studio. It's unbelievable. It's starting to feel like home already. Everybody's here. We got all the boys in the big booth back in there. We got Wayne Gelman down from upstate New
York.
Uptown. From uptown.
Right. Uptown, upstate.
How you doing, Wayne?
Just fine. I tell you, I am so impressed.
Isn't
you know?
It beautiful?
I think we need to have people from Three Park come over here and tour.
You know? What? They hated us up there.
No, well, you know, I don't want to go there, you know. Trying to make nice with both sides. But, I mean, honest to God, this is really a very lovely edifice we have here.
And we're going to walk out into that world out there, and there are all those people that we have to meet some of the people that work here, Riley. How's that going to make you feel? Yeah. You're going to have to meet a few people.
Oh, man, that's
new
right.
People. There's like 20 people in here. I see names all over stuff. I don't know who these people are.
It's weird because we exist in this different world. We exist in this world in the middle of the night. There's some people we never see, but now we're going to see them every day.
Well, one thing I want to clear up before we
try to make that sound like a good thing.
Forgive me.
Yes, I'm sorry.
There's someone here. I don't know the gentleman's name, but he has confused me for Al Sharpton, you know, at least two or three occasions since I've been here since Friday.
He's one of the contractors.
Guys. Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's a contractor.
Okay, so he's not going to be here on a regular basis.
Somebody find out. Somebody find out what his record is on minority hiring. Right.
I'll tell you, Wayne. If he's here on a regular basis, we'll straighten him out.
Do I look like the Reverend Al Sharpton?
Yeah. Well, you're black and you got a mustache. I mean, you know, for some people, that's enough.
Yeah. 7 minutes past the hour.
No, but to some guys that like you have graying temples, you have a mustache, they're not differentiating.
But I think as I have gotten older, he looks more like me.
Well, I heard that you talked to Al. He talked to Al Sharpton the other day. Said he can't. Everywhere he goes, people come up to me. Are you Wayne Gelman? Are you News Daddy?
Are you News Daddy?
News Daddy.
Yeah.
I think that fits his role better than me.
Something Daddy. Yes. I'm not sure. Maybe it's News Daddy. And now we're neglecting Jim Earl, who is over here. We promised people. You know what? Yeah, I'll tell you. Want to hear a story, Jim?
Sure. Can I just say I think you look more like Dolomite than
Dolomite. Rudy Ray Moore.
Spoken highly of you. You know, I've actually missed you the last couple of weeks,
but that's over, Jim.
Yeah, that's done now, pal.
So, Jim, here, dig this. Brendan, P.W. McDonald, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, are in a small coffee shop around the corner enjoying some a breakfast sandwich the other day after our live broadcast. Listen to me.
Yeah.
Who did they run into?
who is a big fan of Jim Earl and all the characters.
Reverend Sharpton.
No, sir.
Mrs. Earl?
No, sir.
Dolomite?
No. Susan Sarandon. Went out of her way to say how much she loved the show, how much she listened to the show, was planning on coming down to the remote and missed you. Said, where has Milfington been?
Really?
Absolutely.
Is she single?
No.
No?
She could be, man.
And her old man can kick your behind, too, so don't even think about it.
Who are you?
That's Mark Riley.
Al Sharpton.
Yeah. I don't recognize him in the news studio.
In the what?
In the news studio.
Oh, okay.
All right, so Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit about what a guy like you, a creative, a genius sort, does on a two-week vacation?
I help move my stuff out of my dad's place in Orange County.
Wow, you know how to live, man.
WOC, yo.
I surf city.
Yeah.
Huntington Beach.
So did everything go all right, or was it aggravating? Because you looked rested.
It was very aggravating.
You look less pale.
You had to drive storage stuff up to Santa Rosa, California, and back. And
you went all the way up to Santa Rosa?
That's right.
Wow. I got a cousin lives up there.
That's really interesting, Mark. Anyway.
Hey.
What the hell was that?
When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you.
Man, is this boring radio or Air America radio?
Hey, you want some interesting radio? Hey, wait, go over here, take a look at his feet, and tell me what kind of sneakers he's got.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting
look
radio.
At his feet.
Go ahead, look at his feet. Go ahead. Because he thinks that this is just something I made up.
This is riveting. Oh, my God, I hear it.
Converse.
No.
The Hurleys.
Skips! There you go. Skips!
Wow. Well, I just heard the sound of knobs turning across America. Oh, my God. You're right, Riley. That was a shift to the more interesting.
There you go.
Hey, Wayne, guess what kind of underpants I'm wearing? Just now that we're on a tear here.
You don't want to see mine.
No, you know what? That would be riveting radio.
It would be.
To have Wayne Gelman show us his underpants.
I can see our TSLs rising at the moment.
There you go.
I don't know what's rising. But Wayne, what do you, briefs or boxer guy?
No, I'm into briefs.
Oh, good.
Real briefs.
Really?
You know, I could have an accident on the street. You don't want to give the medics a hard time.
Yeah, you want them to be able to get right in there without any problems.
Exactly.
Because that's going to be the first thing they go for. It's like, it looks like he broke his leg. Take his pants off.
You know me, Mark. God.
What,
Jim? Oh, natural.
Wow. Hey, I can't say that? What do you mean, I can't say that?
Do we know how to operate the new delay button?
I think Chris did. I'm sorry I made that mistake.
That was the first dump in the new studio.
The first dump in the new studio had to be because of me.
Commando. You know, Commando.
It seemed like it was okay. How was that not okay to say those two words together?
Let's move on.
All right, fine. This has been, as Riley said, riveting radio. We were able to cover. I knew you would wear briefs, but I was kind of hoping you'd say boxers. Wayne.
You're really that concerned.
Yeah, a little bit. But it's okay. No, I don't find it offensive. Do you wear Speedos as well when you go swimming?
No. That's too much. That's too provocative.
Too provocative.
How sharp and
I still have to get home. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you did.
Oh, man.
With all due respect.
Yeah. So you were in California, you went to Santa Rosa, you dropped some stuff off. That's a thrilling vacation.
Well, went to Berkeley and San Francisco. That was fun.
Did you see some friends? Did you see family?
Did your
significant other go with you?
Yes, she did.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to see you back. You look flush. You look healthy.
Sun out in California.
I know. But there's sun here, too, as well, Jim. You just have to go outside.
You just have to be rich enough to get it.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right. In New York, you have to be able to afford the sun. I've heard
you
that.
You do, you know.
All right, this is going nowhere. This is just like old times. You know, we had a segment that was based on nothing
me.
That was
you don't like
it
me.
Was exciting and fun.
You never liked me.
I do like you, man. I do.
Do you like anybody?
Yes, I do like a lot of people. I enjoy the company of Mark Riley.
Thank
Wayne
you.
Gelman is here.
That's
like
not what you tell me in private.
Please, please. You know what is shared between us guys is supposed to stay between. I love all these people, Jim.
All these people.
Oh,
I've heard that
God.
Before.
I did the sweep. I did the sweep. I went all these people and those white guys in the booth. All right, did we clear it up? Are we okay now?
Dan Pashman.
Yes. You know.
All right. So are we doing this
without
now?
Dan Pashman?
Without Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey. Actually, I have no problem with any of these people.
people. None of these people in the immediate world right here have gotten on my nerves. You, Gelman?
No.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But Jim, on the other hand, it's good to see you.
Yeah, but
I'm really glad we pulled you in for the top of the... I'm not Pops. He's Pops.
I'm Pops.
What are you? Well, you're like 48, 49?
I do not distinguish between colors.
Uh-huh. That's a great story. Just going to leave that hang there?
That's right. This is a controversial radio network.
It is. Oh,
God forbid we should have a little.
Yeah, a little what?
It's 8:14 after the hour.
All right, 8:14
after the hour?
That's a new way of saying it, Riley. Get used to it. New studios, right?
We can go out on that. And in a minute, I'll tell you which Bush got arrested. Okay.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Morning.
Getting used to the new studios. Very exciting. Look, folks, here we go with some news. Very interesting. If you go on any of the news sites, Yahoo or Air America, not Air America, I said that twice, America Online, the two top stories are the Emmys and North Korea ends their nuclear program. Mm. So the Emmys are what they are. I got to be honest with you. I have to admit, I am out of the loop. I have not watched almost any of these shows. I've never seen Desperate Housewives. I've seen one episode of Arrested Development. I have never seen or even heard of the show Lost, which won.
That's a great show, dude.
The best drama series. Who is that, Kalo?
Yep.
Yeah. Is it a great show?
That show is hands down the best of the year.
Where the hell do you guys have time to watch? Do I just not know how to work my TiVo? What are you, TiVo everything because you listen, you know all the music?
I TiVo everything, and I watch it when I go home at like 2.
I don't know. Okay, so that's the difference between me and you. I tend to cook when I go home.
See?
That's what I really do. I spend a lot of time making food. It's ridiculous. I should watch more television. That would enrich my life. Maybe listen to more music. Like this weekend, I played guitar for like 3 or 4 hours to get my chops back just in case someone calls and needs a studio player. And I cooked some stuff. And I watched The American Friend, an old Wim Wenders film.
Oh,
that's
now,
what I did.
Did you watch Downfall again?
Oh man, I gotta get on that. I gotta follow through with my downfall Hitler obsession. Let's keep doing some more news here. Let's get through this. I want to get to tell you which Bush was arrested. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Riley. Despite the warnings of the man the president put in charge to oversee FEMA down there in New Orleans, this guy Vice Admiral Thad W. Allen, Mayor Ray Nagin is sticking by his promise to try and get 180,000 back into that city, at least in some capacity into some of the areas that were the least affected by the floods. There's a lot of confusion as to, there's really no confusion in the sense that it's clearly a toxic environment. It's clearly unsafe. But Nagin is making this decision to bully on ahead, probably at the behest of the president and the business community of New Orleans. But that's going to happen.
It is going to happen, but how it happens is very much up to question, because FEMA, the agency that is supposed to oversee it happening, is in complete, as you point out, disarray. I don't know how Mayor Nagin thinks that FEMA can supervise or help or deal with perhaps any kind of emergency that might take place as a byproduct of people rushing back into New Orleans. FEMA seems completely unequipped to deal with anything.
Well, not just FEMA. It's everything that they've put in place to try to help people coming back in. There was supposed to be these checkpoints where documents were to be checked to see if people lived in the area they were trying to get back into for their safety. That seems to have broken down. The federal aid hotline mentioned by President Bush in his address seems to be jammed all the time. Federal officials are often unable to give local government permission to proceed with fundamental tasks to get their towns running again. The communication between, say, Mayor Ray Nagin and FEMA is completely on two different pages, to the point where they have the separate press conferences.
Not only do they have separate press conferences, in many instances, the FEMA officials themselves don't even know how to reach Mayor Nagin.
Officials say that they are uncertain whether they can meet the president's goal of providing housing for 100,000 people who are now in shelters by the middle of next week. There are a couple of good things. There's a couple of beams of light. The Army Corps of Engineers, which initially predicted that pumping out New Orleans would take up to 3 months, now predicts that the enormous task will be wrapped up by about October 2nd. FEMA and its partners have delivered, as of Friday morning, more than 177 million tons of ice, 63 million liters of water, and 26 million ready-to-eat meals throughout Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. More than $1.25 billion of federal disaster aid has also been distributed directly to many of the just over 1 million victims in the three-state region that registered for aid. But even that's an issue. Some people registering couldn't get through to register. Some people waiting online to go to the Red Cross because they didn't take a number properly are having trouble getting through the Red Cross. According to the vice president of an organization that's in charge of overseeing hospitals, the entire health infrastructure of New Orleans is inoperative.
Yeah, it is inoperative, and they don't know when it is going to be back up and running. At least one hospital, according to a published report we saw here this morning, is beyond repair. They're not going to be able to fix it at all.
And now they're evacuating the Lower Keys off of Florida because another storm is coming. They're not sure if it's going to be a hurricane. Apparently there's a hurricane watch in place because anything that could have winds over 75 miles per hour can be categorized a hurricane. They're asking tourists to evacuate. Are they going to be prepared for that? As we found last week in North Carolina, they yes. almost overprepared. They overcompensated. They sent about 200 people there. FEMA is not going to get, you know, they're going to be very alert and aware as to how they're represented in the media. And I think that's one of the reasons. But you know what? I'm going to take that back. This guy, this Admiral Thad Allen, the guy's in charge of the stuff on the ground in the Gulf, mm-hmm. I think is being precautious, is taking caution because he should. You know, we talked to Hugh Kaufman from the EPA, who we're going to talk to again tomorrow. And if there's no reason not to believe him that the toxic residue that is going to be left even after the water recedes is going to be very dangerous. And I think that Ray Nagin is setting himself up for a little problem here. He's gambling, I think, with his own future by saying that, you know, we're going to go ahead and bring people in over the next week. We're going to do it as quickly as possible because I think he's been set up a little bit by the president and by the business community in the sense that he really has no choice but to play ball with these guys. They're going to crush him either way. So he's going to take the bet and say, I'll bring him back in. But if people start getting sick, you know, if it's certainly not unlike 9/11 where people got sick, if it's further enough down the pike, you know, it disappears off the screen of most people, but doesn't mean it's any less heinous. But if these people start getting sick in the next year or so, he's gonna take a fall, and he should.
Well, look, what Ray Nagin is experiencing is the same kind of whipsawing that the new administration over in Iraq is feeling, where the Americans are saying, look, you know, we got to get these people trained, we got to get them up and running so we can withdraw some of our troops. And the same kind of pressure is being put on Ray Nagin. We want to get this thing fast. And what's the common denominator? Bush needs good news.
Well, but I think that they should take the onus. I think the Republicans should take the onus. I feel like they're setting this guy up on some level. He's a Democratic mayor. She's a Democratic senator, Landrieu. It's a Democratic governor. So, you know, the whole thing concerns me. So I promise you some information. Here's some information. The youngest son of Jeb Bush, that's Jeb Jr., was busted for public intoxication and resisting arrest in Austin, Texas. He was released on a $2,500 bond for the resisting arrest charge and personal reconnaissance on the drunk in public charge. But I'll tell you, these Bushes, they've got a little bit of a history for getting arrested. Certainly George W. Bush was busted. He's been busted for disorderly conduct. He was also, there's the mystery community service issue where it's been assumed that he got nailed for doing blow and his daddy covered it up, but he still had to go do the community service because God knows it's not like these Bushes to be charitable. It's not like George W. at any point in his life to say, yeah, sure, I'll work at a halfway house. Let me work with the underprivileged a little bit, because certainly the way this family feels about the underprivileged is clear at this point after what Barbara Bush said at the Astrodome last week or 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, but it's also very clear about how they feel about the privileged, because these folks have got like a three-page rap sheet we're looking in front of us, and in most cases there have been very little consequences for the actions of the Bush family.
Yeah.
Including, by the way, Columba Bush, Jeb's wife, who was busted for smuggling.
19 yeah. grand worth of clothes.
Well, yeah, you know how that works. That's someone coming in from her trip, you know, after being abroad, saying, I'm not going to declare anything at customs, and she got busted for it.
Yeah.
But there's been drug busts in that family. There's been the bottom line is with these cats, though, the Bushes, is that they're not going to do time. They're going to get off. I'm sure that when this kid got busted in Austin, he was like, don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
Just take me over to the governor's place. I got friends over there. Even though his uncle's not there anymore, they still got friends.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about eating in my neighborhood. We've got a woman who wrote a book all about the diverse, eclectic eating possibilities in Queens. At 27 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Wow, I think we're leveling off here, Riley. I think the new studio—it's starting to feel a little broken in.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out. We'll figure out all the new tricks. It's going to be good. Hey, people, if you want to join the Morning Sedition March on Washington, you can come with us. Meet us down there. We're going to be down there on Friday. We'll be broadcasting live from the XM radio studios in D.C. this Friday, the day before the Green Fest and the big anti-war rally. We'll have Cindy Sheehan live in person. That'll be fun. You'll need tickets for this one, though, folks. Go to morningsedition.com and enter to win a free pair. The contest is open until the end of our show on Wednesday morning. Well, I just said that Cindy Sheehan will be fun. Yeah, I mean, it's. I'm just going to be happy to meet her because we've talked to her so much, and it will be fun. She's a very nice woman. Right now, I'm very excited about this book. Today begins Restaurant Week in New York City's most... Come on, man. Today begins Restaurant Week in New York City's most ethnically diverse borough. That is Queens. That is where I live. And because the food is as diverse as the people, there are a lot of options out there. Here to help us sort out the gems from the duds is the author of Eating Like Queens, A Guide to Ethnic Dining in America's Melting Pot, Queens, New York. Good morning, Suzanne Parker.
Good morning, Mark.
It's nice to see you. So this book, a lot of people who don't live in New York, judge New York a little bit, or they miss it, or they love it, don't know just how amazing Queens is. And you've lived there most of your life, and this book is almost like a life's work. Is that true?
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. I mean, it only took me about a year and a half to write it, but I did the research for many, many years.
Yeah.
I don't want to give my age away, but it's a long time.
But you're one of these people. You're like me. I'll look at a unique restaurant or a place that's kind of bizarre. Maybe I don't understand it. And I'll look at it someplace. I really want to go in. I want to challenge myself. I want to know, what's good and what isn't. And I had a bad experience the other night, actually. I ordered the wrong thing at a Brazilian place, and it upset me because how do you trust your instincts? How do you know?
How do I trust my instincts? I don't always have a good experience when I go into a restaurant, but neither do you. And at least you don't go broke from doing it in Queens.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you can experiment, and most of the time when you go into an ethnic restaurant that's of an unfamiliar ethnicity, then at least you have an interesting experience, a learning experience, and sometimes you love the food and sometimes you don't. What I've tried to do with my book is to explain the food of each cuisine so that forewarned is forearmed. You can read my book and either say, that sounds good, or read about another cuisine and say, not for me. I hate spicy food.
Sure.
And so that makes it a little bit easier to make those kind of decisions.
Sure. How many did you count, though? How many cuisines are there around that you've experienced? Because it looks like here in the book, you got South Asia, you got the North, the West, the South, the East. You have Southeast Asia, the Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Central Asia, you got Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Tibet. You got the Middle East. You have Egypt, Israel, Turkey, Armenia. South America, you have Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Argentina, Brazil. There's Mexico, El Salvador, Dominican. This is unbelievable. And that's not even getting to just French and Greek and Japanese. I mean, this is incredibly eclectic. Now, here's the one that I just stopped on, because I have some in my neighborhood that I don't. Uzbekistan and Tajikistan. What are the big, what's yummy in Uzbekistan?
Okay. It's a Central Asian cuisine. Yeah. Don't laugh. All There's right, plenty okay. that's yummy.
Okay.
they're big on kebabs.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Kebabs seem to travel through the world.
Yeah.
Well, in Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, they're not big farming communities.
Uh-huh.
You know, they come from nomadic people.
Mm-hmm.
So they barbecue. They cook on the run. I shouldn't say barbecue, but grill.
Okay.
They cook
okay.
on the run.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of And they're shepherds, so you see a lot of kebabs. Mm-hmm. There's also something that they make called samsas, which are, you know, they're the equivalent of samosas in Indian cuisine.
Like a turnover.
Meat-filled pie, and those are great. And then their bread is wonderful, la pesca.
No, pesca. So, yeah. La pesca or pesca?
La pesca.
I notice all like all different cultures have a different approach to bread. And some of the is it a flatbread, that one? Is it a
Yes. It's like a tandoori bread.
Okay.
Now, there, I guess, is a sort of general rule of thumb that in a community as diverse as Queens, with as many different kinds of communities as Queens, that if you're going to eat an ethnic cuisine, you need to eat it in the neighborhood where that ethnic group dominates. Are there good restaurants, for example, good Indian restaurants, outside of the community in Queens where Indians live?
Well, there are so many Indians living all over Queens, or I should say South Asians, so that it's hard to say that you're eating outside of the communities where Indians or South Asians live. I think people think of Jackson Heights as being Little India in Queens, which it is, but even though it has that strip on 74th Street, the community is very mixed, and the reason that's sprang up is that originally there was a guy selling luggage and electronics there that had Indian whatever the kind of watts and amps and I don't know whatever they needed to take back home to India. He sold small appliances.
Okay.
And so that became a nucleus where Indians visiting this country would go to buy their stuff.
That's interesting.
And then after that, they started having these jewelry stores for Indian bridal jewelry. Mm-hmm. And of course, Indians being very enterprising said, these people gotta eat.
Yeah.
You know, and so the majority of the people, the Indian people that were coming there to shop were like the Jews that go to the Lower East Side in Manhattan to buy Jewish food. You don't see so much of that anymore. But for the last 50 years, few of them lived there. They would come from all over.
Right, from Jersey even.
Yeah. From as far as Jersey.
That's right.
And they would buy their pickles and go home. And that was the same phenomenon that was happening in Jackson Heights.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've gone there a couple of times. I used to go to the Jackson Diner, and then the last couple of times I was there, I didn't have that great an experience. It's not as good as it used to be, but it's still very good.
Yeah.
What's the best Indian food out there in Queens that you've had? I know you make the differentiation. A lot of people don't realize that there are several different types of Indian food from different regions, which I didn't know.
It's a subcontinent.
Right.
I mean, look at America. Uh-huh. You know.
Which is your favorite kind? Which is the best Indian restaurant out there, just for our people who are listening in Queens? We got a lot of listeners out there.
I hate to use the word best.
I'm sorry.
You know, I really...
What's the one that you like a lot?
Let's see. I love South Indian food, which is vegetarian.
Right.
And there's a place called Dosa Diner that I like a lot.
Okay, see, you know, it's so weird.
And that's in Jackson Heights.
It's so weird because I'm saying that like our listeners care, but really I'm just looking for me. I'm just looking for, like, I want the advice.
Read the book.
Because I'm going to read the book. I'd like other people to read the book because I'm looking forward to exploring some of the different places I haven't been. I live right by the Steinway area, and you had an experience in an Egyptian restaurant that I read about. Didn't you go into one of those hookah places?
Yes. I wouldn't call it a restaurant. Actually, it's a hookah bar, and basically the Arab men go there to hang out and smoke sheesh and play backgammon. It has a very clubbish atmosphere, and I was kind of nervous about going in because Arab men don't have the greatest rep when it comes to a nice Jewish girl invading their enclaves. But I said to myself, this is America. It's a public place. Yeah. What can they do to me?
Right.
And then I didn't dwell. And so I walked in, and every head turned and gave me this, what are you doing here look.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the guy who looked like he was in charge, and I explained about the book and so forth. And they couldn't have been more lovely.
Uh-huh.
I immediately became everybody's best friend. They all wanted to pose for pictures with me, told me to come back any time.
They set you up with a pipe?
Well, they would have.
Yeah, because I have not gone in to smoke of the hookah.
Yeah, I'm a confirmed non-smoker, but I still, you know, again, with any kind of food, I don't like every kind of food there is. I don't think anybody does.
Right.
But I find it interesting, and I still cover it whether I like it or not.
So now, is this a, do you find that this is specific in your experience to Queens? Or because I've traveled around the country, and some, you know, some smaller cities and other cities, they have neighborhoods that have ethnic food of different kinds, but it just seems that Queens, I just by reading that table of contents, I was blown away. There's nothing like it, is there?
Well, Queens is the most multi-ethnic county in the United States, which probably makes it the most multi-ethnic county in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any figures on that, but who's as multi-ethnic as we are?
That's right. Let's get our researcher on us. Yeah, that's. I think that's absolutely right. I don't even know when where I live in Astoria, I have a hard time figuring out where people are from, and I'm not very good at that anyways, but there are some bars and some restaurants, I'm like, what country is that even representing? Do you just ever go in and just go, what are you?
Well, I generally know, but then I usually want to know the subtext. In other words, I'll go into an Indian restaurant, and I will ask them what part of India they're from.
Yeah, you know, you made an interesting point in something I was reading about you, is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, the idea of sharing food is such a communal event. It's an event that brings people together. And you make a statement that, you know, you think that there is some answer to almost world peace in terms of how...
Absolutely. I think at the UN last week, if they required that every country bring a dish like a big potluck, we could have saved the world.
I've always said that, you know, because like India and Pakistan right next to each other, and my first thought is like, oh, they got such nice breads.
Well,
can't they?
You know, what's interesting about Queens is the same cultures that are blowing each other up on the other side of the world. In this country, they're shopping in the same stores, and the so-called enemy is working for... If you go in the back of a Muslim Indian restaurant, mm-hmm. there are Hindus working in the back, and everybody gets along fine. The Arabs and the Israelis go to the same Middle Eastern stores, and there's no problem, you know?
That's the amazing thing about America. And I think your book is great, and I'd like to, I want people to, you can also go to www.discoverqueens.info for the big festival where all these, there's a lot of restaurants are going to be involved, and starting on Monday, that is today, Queens Restaurant Week, is about 50 to 60 restaurants signed on and are having special dinners in honor of the World's Fair in 1964. In your book, Eating Like Queens, Suzanne Parker has been with us. It's a guide to ethnic dining in America's Melting Pot, Queens, New York. Where can you get this book? At jonesbooks.com?
That's my publisher. Sure, okay. But you can get it wherever books are sold,
I think
is the line. And I'm also going to be at the three Queens Public Libraries. I'm going to be at the Flushing Library on October 9th, the Forest Hills Library on October 15th, and the Jackson Heights Library on October 22nd.
Well, Susan Parker, it was great talking to you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Okay, we'll come back. We're going to have the liberal agenda, and we might have little Goliath talk about what's in his head. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Yeah, I don't even know where the landing gear is for this new machine we're in, but...
Press a button!
It's 51 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program with Mark Maron, myself, and that's Mark Riley over there.
Yep.
We are broadcasting from the brand spanking new studios here at Master Control, at Mission Control, at Ground Control, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's a beautiful new facility. For any of you doubters who thought that Air America might not be doing so well, I'm here to tell you I'm looking at the smiling face of one of our many presidents standing in the new booth here at the new studios at Air America Radio, and I couldn't be more excited to be working in this new facility. Does it sound any different coming out to you out there? Don't call, we don't have time, but it must sound good. I feel us breaking it in, Riley.
Feel
good about it?
Yeah, it's comfy, man. It's a good space, and we've got good sound. We'll be all right.
Well, let's talk about this story that you found to be interesting, because it's one of those public service stories that we need to do occasionally, is that the price gap between between cable and broadband service and phone carriers' digital subscriber lines widened to an all-time high in August, which means that, you know, apparently the stuff that you get through the computer is much more expensive than what's being offered on the phone. And this is important to people in making those kind of decisions that we have to make every day, which is what to go with. What do you got?
I got broadband, but I'm starting to rethink that now. I mean, you got three levels here. You got dial-up service,
yeah,
which I think the majority of Americans still have.
Yeah.
You also have DSL, which is faster, and then you got broadband, which is the one that comes through cable. DSL comes through your local phone
right,
company.
Right, that's what I got. It took a while to get it in, but apparently Verizon is offering a stripped-down version of this, a little slower connection for like $15 a month. I don't want to plug Verizon because they put me through a hell that I don't even want to talk about. But once it got working, it is working, but they're offering that service. And here's another story. The major American cell phone carriers have so far refused to sell porno from the same content providing menus that they sell ringtones and video games from, but the times may be changing, Riley.
Money!
Apparently, new phones have these beautiful little screens that would do justice to filth, and European companies are already cashing in to the tune of $10 million a year, so now you're going to see people not just looking at pictures on the train. It's great.
And not just pictures. They're going to be looking at dirty pictures.
They're going to be looking at dirty pictures on the train. And a lot of people don't realize that some of these companies that provide phone service also provide a lot of the filth for many of the major hotel chains.
Well, yeah, because when you're trying to get market share, when you're trying to make your nut, you go where the money is. And
yeah,
what's happening with these cell phone carriers is there's so many. There were a whole bunch of them. They all consolidated now. Sprint and Nextel are together. This one and that one are together. And now they've got to try and, you know, make their little market share a little bit larger, and that's the way to do it.
Well, that's what the phone companies are all about, getting to you faster and cheaper. And now it almost seems like it's all designed to provide porn to people.
Well,
maybe I'm wrong.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the religious right realizes that this stuff can bend up on your cell phone.
I'm telling you, you mark my words, Riley. We talked to Harry Reams last week,
yeah,
and also I watched that documentary about Deep Throat, and that guy Parrish, the guy that prosecuted Reams. In the 70s. He said it the most clear. He said, I wish the Justice Department would solve this terrorist thing because this is prime time to go after obscenity cases. Now, I believe, and I've always believed, that the main problem with the Patriot Act, when it comes right down to it, is once they do get some sort of handle on the terrorist issue, or whatever they're using that to put the Patriot Act through, they're going to come after whoever they want. And this whole idea that no one's watching you and where you're going on your internet, I mean, come on, man. It's only a matter of time before you chronic masturbators are put in camps like Guantanamo. What's going to happen then? What if they don't have porn there? What are you going to do?
Let me tell you what they're going to do. They're going to be real slick about this. They want to turn somebody. The government wants to turn somebody. Let's start looking at what you've been downloading on your cell phone. Watch what they do.
Oh, the cell phone. That's right. All they have to do is take your cell phone.
Right.
And now, you know, if you lose your cell phone, if there's good stuff on it, there's no way you're getting it back.
No.
I mean, sometimes people... You ever lost your cell phone? My wife, it's one of her hobbies, and she'll get a call from the person. She's got it returned to her almost every time.
Really?
Now they're going to call you and tell you that they like what you got on there.
Yeah, they're going to
be like, good taste.
Yeah, real good. Where can I get this?
Like, dude, what site did you get that off of? And now, I thought it would break up with so many people involved, but you can see it really clearly on this phone. Yeah, it's going to actually sell a phone. All right. Boy, that was a nice way to end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Big finish. Yeah, happy ending. There's the sound of the facts. There's the sound of the facts of the Streisand compound. Here's your liberal agenda for today. One, find out what will be the name of the next several hurricanes after Ophelia and accuse the Bush administration of reacting too slowly to all of them. This is pre-accusation. Two, make people aware of mice infected with plague that disappeared from New Jersey animal testing lab. Demand hospice care for the mice. Find new color for ribbon to support them.
Oh, Lord.
Three, after evacuation proceedings are finished in the Florida Keys, start evacuation proceedings in Iraq. American troops first.
There you go.
That was a kind of a powerful, righteous one that actually, yes,
yeah.
There we go. Four, name new French Quarter drink after Michael Brown. Call it the delayed reaction. Five, vote absentee in Afghani elections. Their Green Party could really use your help. All right, more poppies. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. If Bush's approval numbers get any lower, the Army Corps of Engineers will have to build the levee system to protect them. Wake up, sheeple. It's the only public works project Bush would fully fund. Oh boy, how quick would that music go out? Bang! I was waiting for. I'm trying to fill the gaps of ether here with this new studio. So it's deep, man.
But it's a great day in the new studio, man. It's a great first day. We had two great first guests, mm-hmm. Walter Mosley and Suzanne Parker, and tomorrow. The fearless Hugh Kaufman at the EPA is going to join us with more revelations about the cover-up going on to lie to Americans about the safety of the Gulf Coast. And with Ray Nagin inviting people back
in, I know, there's some serious,
this is going to be real, real important.
Serious triangulations going on. I'm going to have to do the math on this, Riley.
Yeah, well, hey, man, people better be careful, and Hugh Kaufman will tell us why.
All right.
Tomorrow morning, Marin, it's been fun.
It has been.
This is Air America Radio.